Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
Now with the results across the line, another mini two-on-one. Metropolitan can't do anything with it. Now it is back, he scores! Picked up his own rebound, Metropolitan makes it 2-1!
We'd like to welcome Glenn Metropolitan, Metro, to All Over the Map. A native of Toronto, Ontario, Metropolitan was never drafted by an OHL or NHL team, yet managed a 10-year NHL career and 407 games played. After a GTHL career mostly in AA hockey, Metropolitan played two seasons for the Richmond Hill Riots Junior B Hockey Club, OHA, before heading west to play for the Vernon Lakers of the British Columbia Junior Hockey League. But it's the man behind the hockey that I care about the most. This is the true story, how Glenn Metropolitan, Metro, turned all his adversities and converted them into victories. Welcome, brother man, to All Over the Map. Now, this is truly the rocky story of hockey, Glenn Metropolitan. All right, so this is your chance to tell your story to the world of true perseverance and an unwavering commitment to the definition of never give up. Let's start with your childhood, my friend. Growing up in the projects of Regent Park, which has been described by a local newspaper as living there is like getting kicked in the teeth.
Well, guess that pretty well sums it up. Not the kind of upbringing a regular hockey player kind of went through, I guess. That being said, you know, drug infested, prostitution, crime. That's kind of the area that I grew up in, Regent Park. But it was a great childhood. Had lots of good friends. We all, the good kids played hockey, so to speak, and the other ones got off track, and they picked the tough road. So it is what it was, and that's where we are now. So
it's close to Scarborough, right?
Yeah, just basically Scarborough. Then you got Scarborough, East York, Downtown. But I was right in the middle of the heavy stuff. So.
Right in the middle of the circus, eh?
Yeah, pretty much, man. Yeah. But as a kid growing up, right, you don't know any.
You know any better? That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had the best childhood. All of my buddies, we all had just single parents. You know, trying to control us kids, you know, misguided youth, and we were just running a road. So we had a blast doing it. But there's no way I'd recommend raising a kid that way. It taught me some strength. So
humble beginnings. Let's talk about your road to achieving your dreams, Mets.
Yeah. Well, I have so many people that was part of my journey, you know. Where do I start, really? You start in just playing ball hockey with everyone, and then basically you're at the Parks and Recreation Centers. And then you're playing wherever you could play just to stay happy. Basically, that's kind of was my escape. Basically, hockey was my happiness, getting away from the house, you know, all the stuff that was, all the noise that was in my life outside. Well,
that's the thing, you know, you talk about the whole, like when I say rocky story of hockey, it's like you didn't take the standard route, so to speak, you know, not playing organized hockey to the age of 12. You know, hockey gear being handed down to you, you know, not having, you know, the privilege, obviously, to, you know, be supported by, you know, new hockey gear, all that kind of stuff that, you know, a lot of kids nowadays, I mean, I think it's like 10 grand a year to put a kid through hockey. It's insanity, you know, yeah, so
I wouldn't be able to play. I was fortunate enough to have the rinks to play on that the city took care of. And then Regent Park, we also had our own indoor ice rink called Moss Park. That's kind of where I started off. It was a free league. And, you know, quite frankly, my mom didn't, you know, we didn't have the money to play in those leagues. So I did all my hockey outside. And whenever I did play in the leagues, I got all the equipment, like you're saying, from the hand-me-downs, from my teammates that, you know, their feet got too big. So they gave me their old skates with that much steel to skate in. So
I always felt bad for my brother because my brother always got my hand-me-downs. He's like, why does Ryan always get the right?
It's a sport, right? That's why the road I came up, it would be hard to see any kids coming up from there. That's for sure.
Yeah. So I know Glenn, the person, has always treated people and everybody with respect. Who was it that instilled the core values into you growing up as a person?
I have to go with my mom. You know, my mom's been always there for me. And so I was saying to you earlier, too, the Parks and Recreation people that actually were there for you after school, you know, those were the ones that were my mentors, kind of teaching you the right path, you know, stay straight and, you know, keep chasing your goals type thing. But my mom showed me strength and always being there for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, being around that environment, obviously we're a byproduct of our environment in many cases. You know, they say that's an old saying, we're the sub and substance of the five people we associate ourselves with the most. You know, it all comes down to choices. There was obviously many choices for you to go the other way and, you know, start using drugs and, you know, get into the booze or, you know, the crime and play into that, you know, whole demographics of life. But you chose to stay focused and, you know, I mean, that's a lot of,
there's a lot of distractions, a lot of, stuff that can take you away from your goals, your dreams. But, I guess I was in so in love with hockey and that kept my dream alive, you know, just playing hockey. And, unfortunately there were so many better hockey players than I was growing up, you know, that maybe I had a little bit more support in regards to a couple more family members that actually helped me out through hockey, you know, than that other kid. But it's unfortunate that we all didn't get the same support, but it's part of my journey. And some of those guys aren't even alive anymore because they chose that other route, you know, they didn't know any different. So.
And then, so, you know, 12 years old, organized hockey, and then you started playing junior B at, was it 16 or 17?
I started playing 16, 17, playing high school hockey, which wasn't much, you know what I mean? But a good childhood friend, Jeff Wilson, he was playing in with the Toronto Red Wings, Young Nationals, you know, Kevin Weeks, Mike Johnson. They're all in those leagues, but I never had the money and I couldn't get transportation to those rinks anyway, right? Because I was taking a subway wherever I got to play hockey, streetcar, buses. But he was the main guy going into a new team in junior B. He's like, oh, why don't you come and try out? I'm like, well, okay, I'll give it a try. Deep down inside, I knew I was as good as him, you know, but I was just so raw. I was the last cut on that team and kind of rest is history, you know. Played 2 years in Richmond Hill, had great years. And then finally, I got to an age where, you know, growing up in the inner city of Toronto, I turned 19. You can go to the bars now. My buddies quit hockey. They're starting to do other stuff, smoking weed. And I stay focused, you know, in regards for hockey. And I knew Toronto wasn't a place for me to stay. So I had an opportunity to go to Vernon. That's where I met you that year. And Rob Bremner found me out in Guelph. There was some super camp going on in Guelph. And I went there and he discovered me. And he said, why don't you come out to Vernon, get your life straightened out, work hard at school. And I think you'll have a good year. And, you know, I had a pretty good year out there and got recruited and, you know, signed a letter of intent with Bowling Green.
I tell you, I was a bit of a journeyman suitcase after having some adversity. My first year, I was so scared to go to the rink for all the rookie initiations and hazing. But when I came to Vernon and I met you, I was like, this guy's a beauty. I was like, definitely Glenn Metropolis is probably one of the funniest, most real, authentic guys that I ever played with in my life. And, you know, to be able to talk to you right now and, you know, at this stage of our evolution, our development, you know, and just to see what you're doing now as a person, I know your heart, man, it's always been so big. And, you know, I'm full of gratitude, just, you know, just not only just to have you on the show, but to call you my friend and my brother. And that means so much to me.
Well, thanks, Ron. I'm happy to be on your show, bud. It's great to reconnect with you.
Yeah, buddy. Obviously,
the hockey world's a small world, so.
It's a small world after all.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, man. You know, I got to play with the last couple of guests you had there, George LaRocque and Riley. It's good, man. You're doing good work.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, two good guys. You know, that's we pride ourselves on this platform to have good people with a good message. You know, and it's all about community and unity at the end of the day. You know, it doesn't matter if you played hockey. It doesn't matter if you played squash or tennis. It doesn't matter if you work at Save-On Foods. If you got a good message and it's all about giving back and helping others and passing it on and paying it forward, you know, that's what we stand for. Is, you know, just giving people opportunities and trying to create those opportunities for people that are, you know, have less or, you know, such as, you know, people like yourself, you know, coming from those humble beginnings that, you know, there's, you know, you could have gone one way, but you went the other and look where you ended up. And that's something to be like so proud of, man. You know, I remember watching, I guess, you know, I told you before, even, you know, having phone discussions, when I saw you play that first NHL game, I remember where I was, you know, being half in the bag for crying out loud and seeing Metropolit on the back of a Capitals jersey. I was like, yes, he made it. He's there. And, you know, someone who truly deserved it. And, you know, you're the epitome of never give up to me. And that's how I really try to live my life is, you know, I went through my stuff, you know, at a younger age, but, you know, it's one of those things as you get older, you realize what's really important in life. And, you know, you either keep moving forward or you take steps back. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, you're one guy that has that never give up attitude and it's not leaving you anytime soon.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's, yeah, you look at the hockey career, right? You start out in East Coast Hockey League, the IHL, then finally get your chance at NHL and kind of banged around a little bit. So, yeah, I've been blessed too. So.
And so how many NHL teams did you play for? Was it like 10? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I was with the St. Louis Blues for 22 games, then went to the Bruins. Yeah, but, you know, start off in Washington, first NHL team, and then my next one after that came back was the Atlanta Thrashers, St. Louis Blues for a little bit, then I went to Boston, Philly, Montreal.
Where was your favorite place to play?
I want to say, I mean, anywhere in NHL is amazing, obviously, but Boston was a great sports town. Boston, yeah. Montreal, you know, original six teams. You know, you can't beat those places.
That's amazing. You got to play for two original six teams, Beantown and Monty. I mean, that must have been killer. I mean, yeah. What was it like actually stepping onto an ice at the Bell Center with like 23,000 fans just going crazy? I mean, I've watched games there before, man, and there's nothing like it. I mean, it's just, it's a religion, you know?
Yeah, the thing there though, the fans are so, they know so much about hockey or they're not booing you or whatever. They know good hockey and they really appreciate the game there. Montreal is unbelievable. Especially when we had that run. You know, in 2010, we made the conference finals there.
Yeah.
We'd win a series. We'd fly back. We won two game sevens on the road. We'd fly back and cop cars are on fire. They're rioting. I mean, they just loved hockey. They loved us winning. So quite an experience living in that kind of sports town.
Yeah. A lot of pressure too, I bet, eh?
Not so much for me, you know, being a third line guy, you know, but you know, the big guys have, you know, making a big money if you're not performing, man, they get on you. That's for sure. I was kind of like the underdog where, they didn't really expect much out of me, but I kind of gave them more than they expected. So they really took to me, you know, so, it was great, but it was hard on like a Scotty Gomez at times, you know, they kind of had like he had a special clock going when he's going to score the next goal. He went like 82 games without a goal.
I remember that season. I was like, this poor guy is taking more slack than, I mean,
it was tough on him, but it comes with it, man. It comes with the territory.
That's what the boys signed up for, eh?
Yeah.
And then got signed for.
Yeah.
So you played 22 years of pro hockey. How did all those games and travel take a toll on not only your mind and your body, but your spirit as well? You know, you gave your heart to the game of hockey, you know, all the blood and the sweat and the tears that all on the way. I mean, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, that's a long journey, man. A lot of games, a lot of travel. I mean, God, it's just, you know, let's hear a little bit about that. I mean,
yeah, it's, where do I start again? 22 years, you know, I can start my journey where, my first year pro, you know, I go back to Vernon. I didn't get the scholarship. I had to be redshirted. So I said, I'm going to turn pro. So I
Which is a blessing.
What's that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I called Troy Mick, our assistant coach at the time.
Yeah.
Vernon and
Micker.
Micker. He got me a tryout with the Atlanta Knights at the time in the IHL, and their affiliate was East Coast Hockey League team, Nashville. Mm-hmm. And so I got cut right away in Atlanta, got sent down to Nashville, and that's where the journey kind of started, where I remember my first trip. I was a healthy scratch for the first 10 games, and we had a couple extra guys on a bus trip. We went down to Tallahassee to play against the Tiger Sharks, and everyone's sleeping in the aisles and have bunks because they're going to be able to play, so they need somewhere to sleep. And I had to sleep at the front of the bus on the stairs, and the driver's name was Snake. He had like a scorpion's cut-off sleeve leather jacket. You know, I thought he was going to die at the wheel while we're driving down to Tallahassee, how old this guy was. He had so many years on him. But so started there and then basically went on to that next summer, went and played roller hockey, trying to make some extra money, you know, to kind of survive. And after that.
Opted out on landscaping and decided to play roller hockey.
Yeah, I had the summer job. I did landscape. I wanted to kind of just work out hard in the summer. And then finally I got a chance to, you know, I was actually sleeping at my uncle's house.
Yeah.
Underneath the, he made me like a little makeshift room underneath the stairs by the water boiler. And I remember just sweating my balls off in there every night. And I was like, fuck this. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to play roller hockey. So I went and played roller hockey for that summer in Long Island. And, I went to Pensacola Ice Pilots the next year, Quebec Raphaels. They kind of switched Nashville Knights, went to Pensacola, you know, Atlanta went to Quebec. So played about 22 games up in the IHL and 60 in, you know, Pensacola, and had a great year there. And then went to Grand Rapids for 2 years in the IHL and basically got my chance with the Washington Capitals. That kind of started my NHL journey, I guess.
What was that first NHL game like? How'd you feel?
Surreal. It was a dream, right? Finally kind of accomplished what I've always dreamt of as a kid.
The dream had come into fruition.
Yeah, pretty much. But I remember just being scared shitless, really.
Yeah.
And trying to fight the nerves and trying to be able, you know, don't pinch myself. Like, just kind of just stay in a moment and play hard. Because I had a great camp. I was on starting lineup, national anthem down in Florida against the Panthers, and I lined up against Pavel Bure, and my line mates were Adam Oates and Peter Bondra. And it was.
Bure wasn't a bad skater.
No, he's. Yeah. Yeah. What was his nickname? The Russian
Rock. I remember seeing him play at the Pacific Coliseum. It was the second year. I remember, like, literally, the first year I was away playing hockey in Kelowna. My first year was 1991. So I never got to see him play live. But I got to see him play live the second year, and he literally would bring people out of the seat. Like, yeah. It was so good. I mean, that guy in today's game would be incredible. I mean, I think he had 110 points or something like that his best year. But like, if you put him in today's game, you know, with, you know, he played in the clutch and grab era when there was just, it was a little tougher back then. You too. I mean, today's game is so skilled, you know, like there's, you know, all the fighting's not as much, you know, there's not as much, you know, they're fast as heck. I mean, these kids are so skilled. It's unbelievable.
So skilled, so fast, so strong. They're bigger now.
Yeah.
Amazing to watch the evolution of the game. You know, it's, and it leads me to kind of what I'm doing now. You know, I'm doing player development down here in Tampa. So, but yeah, part of the journey, 4 years with the Capitals up and down, Portland, Maine, great city. My first daughter was born there, Olivia. And I did four years up and down, and finally it was like, I can't do this no more. You know, I had to kind of, I asked for a trade, and they said, you know, you're such an asset. We're not just going to give you away. So I had to make a decision to go over to Europe, and I went over to Jokerit in Finland, Helsinki, beautiful, organic. What a country, great people, great hockey for such a small country. Had two good years there, and then went to Lugano, Switzerland, won a championship. In Lugano, MVP of the league, and went to World Championships with Team Canada. And that's kind of where I talked to Don Waddell, and I got a contract with Atlanta Thrashers.
Nice. Is that where you went? Robbie Shrimp?
Shrimp, yeah. I didn't play against Robbie there. He wasn't on my team there. But
okay.
played against him, you know, off and on different leagues, but you know, hockey world's small. Great man.
Yeah, he is very humble. Yeah, we had him on he was our first guest on the show.
That's right.
Yeah, I can say Robbie is just he's a great friend and he's a really good person. Oh my God. He had 145 points in 57 games in the OHL. I mean, 57 goals, 145 points. Are you kidding me? I mean, that guy, if he was given a little bit more of a chance, I think that, I mean, he would have had a long NHL career, but you know, things happen and everything leads you to where you are today. And he's doing some really good stuff with Vision 44. Yeah. And I think you're a part of that as well.
Yeah, I'm one of the coaches on there, the virtual coaches. Yeah,
that's great.
Dabbling into it, he's got such a great thing going, man.
Yeah,
I'm learning from him, even though I'm older. You know, whenever I talk to him, he's got so much wealth of knowledge.
He really does. I talked to him yesterday. It's like every time I talk to him on the phone, I feel like I really get something good out of that conversation. Yeah. Like he actually really takes time to listen. You know, like other people just take time to hear. And they just not really like listen to what you have to say. But like when him and I have conversations, it's like, I feel like I'm coming out of a counseling session. Shrimpy, the jumbo shrimp.
He's one of the good guys. So.
He's a good egg. Absolutely. So in my mind, you were one of the most talented players that I ever played with and against. Having the opportunity to, you know, obviously not play a lot of minutes when you're playing in the NHL, you know, I thought you deserve a lot more ice time, to be honest with you. How did that affect you? And, you know, were you just grateful to have the opportunity, as most Canadian kids do when they play in the NHL?
Well, that's basically it. When I first got in NHL in 99, it was more or less the clutch and grab, don't make mistakes. So I never really got to be my true self at that level, even though I was the best players in the world. I always just played like not to make a mistake. So, you know, I'd be skate to center line, chip it in, go, you know, make contact, you know, create a, you know, stall a puck and do some work down low. But it was all about trying to adjust and finding your role on each team, right? Even though I was a skilled guy, I had to be a penalty killer too. So whatever the team needed, you know, that's part of it, man, to make, because everyone's been on the power play. Doesn't matter if it's the toughest guy there. When they were playing junior hockey, they're on power play. They were always the top guys. So it's the world of the best players. So it was just adjust to whatever the team needed you to be and be the best you could be. Cause you know, someone's below you trying to get your job.
Absolutely.
That's how that goes.
Yeah. So
that goes to the point too, where you're talking about the mental health and all that, the concussions. I mean, I've gotten knocked out cold, or I don't remember where I was, but it was like, you're not keeping me out of the lineup too long because I'm not going to lose my spot, you know? So I'd rush myself back, and maybe it's all catching up to me now. You know what I mean? Maybe the you know, just the way I'm wired now, you know, it's going through some depression parts and kind of.
Yeah. I'm glad that you can be open about this. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there these days, especially hockey players, that have taken so much trauma. I mean, it's like, you know, you go in a war every night, literally it's like Gladiator. It's like, you know, going back to Roman civilization, you're going into an arena, you know, you got these screaming fans that are seeing all the glitz and glamour, you know, guys are knocking each other's heads off here and there. Not as much anymore, but I mean, when a guy gets hit now too, they're flying at a, you know, they're the Kevlar pads and everything, taking those knocks to, I mean, we got neurotransmitters in our gut, for crying out loud. So every time your body's getting hit, you know, there's an impact, obviously, that's, you know, it's shaking up either the melon or whatever. I mean, it's the body takes on a lot of trauma.
Yeah, let's even rewind out to our leagues. Are playing three games in three nights, and you got, back in the day, you had the tough guys that are running, you know, elbowing you in the head. You got to take it, and better refereeing as you go up the levels too, right? So the refereeing is not as good as the minors because everyone's trying to work their way up. So it was tough hockey, man. Playing 82 games like that and having to go back the next night, you know, kind of what was considered a concussion, seeing stars, because every night I was seeing stars.
Yeah, I had no idea. The first concussion that I actually sustained that was diagnosed, I was like, well, I think I've had more of these, you know, like actually seeing stars and being knocked out for over a minute, laying there on the ice, you know, being up 7 feet in the air and your hair, or your head bouncing off the ice, for crying out loud. And then the coach is like, get back out there. You know, it's like, really? No, I mean, no wonder Sidney Crosby feels so good. You know, props to him and his resilience. Oh my God.
I remember me getting, I got cross-checked from Stan Neshkar here, and I got cross-checked into Kevin Weeks. And Kevin Weeks actually got a concussion. He left the game.
Are we talking about Kevin Weeks, the goaltender?
Yeah, the goaltender.
Yeah.
I think I gave him one. He left the game. I ran into him so hard, I got hit from behind. I went in, got stitched up. I came back out and played. I remember being out there going, where am I? There's no way I should have been back on the ice. Someone could have killed me.
But, well, look at Paul Kariya when he scored that goal against New Jersey back in the day after getting hit by Stevens there. I mean, he had snot bubbles coming out of his nose. He doesn't even remember going top shelf and scoring that goal. And apparently he doesn't remember 2 years of his life. I mean, he was going through depression, all kinds of stuff. I mean, Paul and I, you know, we grew up together in the same community. My dad coached Paul's younger brother. You know, our families were good friends growing up. You know, and now he's just like, you know, so far removed from the game. You don't really hear about him too much. You know, he had the honor of, you know, making the Hall of Fame. I think it was 2 years ago. But, you know, I think, you know, he's one of those guys too. He's lucky enough where he's able to be like, you know, by the beach in the water. He really likes the flow and the energy of being on like a paddle board or whatnot. But, yeah. You know, at one point, I mean, Paul Kariya, in my mind, he's another guy in today's game that would just be, I mean, remind me a lot of Bure. Just unbelievable. It's too bad that his career would have been a lot more. I mean, it's not like he didn't have a successful career. But, I mean, if he didn't take some of those blows to the head, you know, I mean, I think he would have been, you know, 130, 140 point man easy. I mean, he had a 200 point seasons back to back without really. I mean, he had Solani later on, but. I mean, the guy was an incredible hockey player. You played against him, you know.
Another level, right?
Next level.
Another level. So.
Yeah, well, your hands were just as good as him. So, in my humble opinion, it was all that stick handling before games with the orange hockey ball.
That's right. That was part of my pregame. Yeah.
I remember.
So you shaft and stuff. Yeah.
So your success over in Europe was incredible, man. The style of play was more skill and finesse. Was that more fun for you? Because you obviously played on the top lines over there. And, you know, obviously you didn't have that opportunity in the NHL. You had to adapt, which you did. But, you know, tell me about your experience overseas. Was it more fun?
Well, going over there, we'd, you know, each team has maybe 4 or 5 imports, depending on the league you're in. But I was fortunate enough to go to great organizations where the imports were great and we had the best kind of country players, you know, that wherever you played. So, you know, the ice surface is bigger over there. So you got a lot more room to make plays. And I just happened to I went over there with confidence and just went over there to play my game and it really adapted to it was my style. And I had, you know, successful, you know, obviously you can tell stats and won some championships with some great organizations and, I had a great journey being able to visit around the world there. Amazing. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Yeah. So how did the term Metro's office come into play? And I know it was compared to Gretzky's office. So the crowd said chance, especially for you and your unparalleled playmaking abilities. I mean, you're a playmaker, man. I remember your vision was unbelievable. So I watched a lot of your highlights.
Yeah. I think Metro's office, I don't know who came up with that, but I think it started in Finland. In Helsinki, I was always on the half wall kind of picking the box apart, you know, the penalty killers. So I think that's kind of where that came from. And that's always been kind of my specialty, I guess, is a power play, you know, and, that's where that started. So interesting. Yeah. And with a chance, they got songs for you over there. Like in Switzerland, they're singing songs.
Well, I mean, that must have pumped you up.
Yeah, it was great. It was great, man. Yeah. It's the atmosphere is, if you watch like a, football soccer match over there, right? Yep. They're yelling the whole game and chanting. They got the fan section where they're always having a great time waving flags. So great experience.
That's awesome. So who was your favorite coach when you played in the National Hockey League? Best coach that you ever had, as far as you know, which gave you the most confidence to go out there and play your game?
Yeah, National Hockey League, I want to say it was probably Claude Julien, you know, the Boston Bruins. When I in 06, I played at the World Championships, and he was the penalty killer coach. And I got to have a good rapport with him, and kind of went there, and he gave me a good role, and he was great for me, you know. In the minors, I got to say it was probably Glenn Hanlon. Glenn Hanlon, loved the guy, you know.
Goalie for the Canucks.
Yeah, after I got sent down after my first game, you know, I thought I was the end of the world, right? I reached, you know, I played my one game, and I was feeling sorry for myself for about a week, and he finally kind of snapped me out of it, and he taught me how to be a better pro, and, you know, don't worry about your last shift, you know, it's about your next shift. So it was that type of deal where, you know, working out, training, stretching, you know, he brought a lot of how to be a good pro, you know, taught me, and thankful for a lot of coaches. Those are just two of the best that I've had.
Right on. So let's hear all about you and your brother uniting after his certain mishap that happened. I know it's a sensitive topic. If you want to elaborate on that, you know, that's I definitely empathize with that because I've been in that situation myself. Yeah, let's talk about that for a sec. You know, having a brother is a special thing.
Yeah, having a brother, I mean, I can rewind it to growing up in and out of foster homes a little bit, you know, with the mom trying to, you know, find her way a little bit, trying to keep us together all the time and having some hardships. But, you know, he was the kid that, you know, you got the good kids, bad kids growing up in inner city where all us hockey guys, we stuck together. And my brother, he didn't really like sports. So he kind of veered to the bad kids, you know, and just started off, you know, stealing a candy bar or whatever from a store to eventually stealing cars to robbing, you know, the parking attendant, you know, whatever, that kind of stuff. And remember getting a call in, I think it was 98 where it all went down. You know, I got a call from, you know, your brother's on TV. It was almost like the OJ Simpson thing, you know, with the camera following the car, there was a manhunt for him. And I guess him and two of his accomplices, they pulled a lawyer and his wife in a posh area of town, bumped them from behind and took them hostage, you know, beat them up for security codes for their house and went to their house. And the husband escaped and got the police involved. And then, you know, obviously you got the charges that came after kidnapping, extortion, all whatever. And then while he was in there, you know that world, right? If someone says they're going to get you, you better get them first, I guess. And
oh yeah, I've had guns put to my head. That's for sure. You know, that was just, you know, the choice I made when hockey didn't go well for certain situations with, you know, adversities with concussions and injuries and whatnot. And you know, when I went down that road, it was dark. Lost a lot of friends. It was either, you know, prison, death, or an addiction of some sort. And you know, I definitely had some destructive behavior patterns with addiction that I've overcome. But I'll tell you what, you know, having your freedom taken away has got to be one of the most debilitating feelings and helpless feelings in the world that I've ever had to endure. You know, the lack of, you know, you feel the lack of self-worth and just everything that goes along with it is just, you know, you're a prisoner. I had one guy in there actually that helped me out a lot. He said, he was an older guy. He said, just because you're in prison, Philly, it doesn't mean that you have to be prisoner of your own mind. And that kind of, you know, he was like kind of my first mentor, so to speak, you know, beyond hockey, because, you know, other than, you know, a few coaches that I had back before I played junior when I left home at when I just turned 16, which was way too young for me. I wasn't developed physically or mentally. I mean, I had the talent, but, you know, I was kind of getting thrown out to the wolves, right? And you got all these big dreams ahead of you and aspirations. And yeah, it's kind of funny where your path leads. And when I ended up in a prison cell, that was the last place I thought I'd ever end up. It was you know, very embarrassing for my family and whatnot. But, you know, what do you do? It's just like one of those things as you get older, it's like, you know, you learn from it and you either change your life or, you know, you go down, down the darkness even more. And, you know, I'm still here. I'm still alive. So are you. So that means we still got a purpose and our job's not done here on this planet. So that's, it's all about giving back now.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back to my brother. Yeah. He's been in here for a while. You know, it's, he's back in there. I got to see him a few years ago when he got out. And the bond wasn't really there. We didn't really grow up together. Right. Cause I was always moving around playing hockey and he was doing his thing, but I always thought, oh man, I don't know how this is going to be when I see him, you know, but we reconnected. It was the best, man. I love him more than anything, but, the choices he made, obviously kind of got him where he's at. And
cause and effect.
Yeah, he's got another year or two left, and we'll reconnect, you know, when that happy day comes.
That'd be awesome, buddy. So at the end of the day, man, we're all humans, and life happens. It's how we respond to our adversity, you know, and turn those adversities into assets. So what was your main driving force? You know, obviously going through adversities and whatnot, what was your driving force, you know, transmuting those adversities into assets, you know, that help fuel you, fuel the fire from within, so to speak?
Good question. I think it was more of just wanting to keep on getting better and better. You know, it's kind of, it was instilled in me, you know, through the hockey career, right? You kind of, you got to just learn how to battle through stuff. And, compete and do what you got to do, right? To kind of keep moving forward.
So yeah. Hockey being such a mental game as well, you know, it's not always the easiest on your psyche, is it?
No, especially when it's your livelihood, right? You know, got to go, you got to perform, and you can't, you got to do it. It's a business. And if you don't do it, then you're getting sent down, or cut, or, so it's survival, man. So I've learned that at an early age to, you know, even practices, guys get sent down after practice. You gotta compete every practice. So you can kind of relate it into life too, right?
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing in business, kind of put the work in, you know, and you'll get rewarded.
Yeah. You're only as good as your last shift, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So what makes Metro's heart sing, buddy?
What makes Metro's heart sing? Well, I guess it always goes to family, I guess, right? The kids making sure they're okay, and they're okay, and then the heart's singing.
Nice.
Like me rapping in the shower. it always goes to family. Make sure they're doing good, right? And you're happy, so.
Yeah, just giving your own happiness in abundance, right? Actually makes you happy, you know? Just goes to show kind of that we're all connected in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So what is your message to the world, to anyone that has a goal in life, and what kind of mindset is needed to convert dreams into reality?
Well, if you got the goal and you want it bad enough, you know, just nothing's easy, right? You got to work for it. So it's kind of hard. Just, I don't really know what to say about that. Just basically, Don't ever give up, right? You're going to get knocked down, but you got to keep getting up. So
just keep believing in yourself, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
The power of belief. Something that you had and something that you have and something that you continue to just keep going with. So I'm so proud of you, buddy. When I look at you and what you've accomplished, even through the hard times, you always found a way to keep going. How challenging was that for you? And especially, you know, now, you know, life after hockey, let's talk about life after hockey. Now, how the transition has been, you know, it's not an easy go for not just NHL hockey players, but for kids coming out of junior that don't know what to do if they didn't go the scholarship route or whatever, you know, it's, you know, trying to find a purpose in life. You know, how tough has that been?
Yeah, it's a, you know, you do 20 years of professional hockey and you go beyond that, you know, juniors and growing up within a dressing room, you know, competing every night for a championship, for a goal, you know, having a schedule every day, right? Get in, stretch, work out, skate, watch video, eat, sleep, play. And then all of a sudden, right, that's gone. I mean, I'm 3 years out now where I've adjusted, but as I can reflect, it was a hard little stage to go through. after retiring and going back to a small little beach town where my ex is and the kids, and trying to find my way without hockey was a battle. So, but I'm in a good place now, talking personally, but you just got to make sure you got a good support system.
Absolutely. You know,
that, right. You got to, and have enough, don't be afraid to reach out to anyone if you're feeling down or whatever. Right. So,
yeah, that's an integral part about the show too. It's all about community and unity. You know, we want to, you know, you're our fifth guest. I'm so grateful to have you on, but you know, I think it's important that, you know, the people that we have on this show is, you know, it's a platform where people can connect and be educated, you know, on not just mental health and psychology and sports and whatnot, because what you did and who you are two separate entities. Riley and I were talking about that the other day. George and I talked about that the other day as well. Same with Robbie. And I mean, all our guests, you know, at the end of the day, we're just people. We're human beings. I know you love people. I love people too. You got a heart of gold, Metro. I know that you always have. And, you know, so it's, you know, your message in life for the kids, you know, coming up through the ranks, you know, not taking yourself maybe too seriously, but still, you know, keeping your, you know, your trajectory and your focus on your goals and your dreams. You know, what do you think about that?
Think about just going back to what my mom said, treat people the way you want to be treated. Simple. But, you know, if it's a young hockey player, just, it's all about your next shift, not your last shift. You know what I mean? That type of mentality. But it's the body language that coaches love to see, you know, come to the rink with enthusiasm. You know, it's just your life.
Was there any coaches that you were scared of?
Scared of?
Yeah. Was there, you know, any coach?
I won't even go into it, but there were some coaches that they shouldn't have probably been coaching.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've all had those guys, but you all try to, you know, push your buttons certain ways. For myself, I needed a pat on the back, you know, not a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
You
know,
that was my personality.
Me too. Exactly. It's, you know, motivation through not intimidation, you know, inspire people through motivation, not intimidation. Intimidating someone's not going to get them to play well. Maybe some of the tough guys or whatever, but I know for players with who's kind of sensitive or whatever, you know, especially a skilled hockey player, you're not going to get many goals out of that kid when you're trying to intimidate the crap out of them. I think that's changed a lot, you know, throughout the game, you know, the last 2 years. I think a lot of these, you know, kids are able to go out there and focus on their strengths. You know,
their coaches are good now, right? They realize the personalities they're dealing with. And that's
the culture is changing for sure.
In the line of work that I'm in now, doing coaching a few teams and doing player development, being back in the hockey world, it's you get a lot more of a kid if you just kind of get down to his level and talk to him, pat him on the back, you know.
And who doesn't want to feel good at the end of the day? Isn't it about making people feel good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things, though, too. I mean, you got to see how he reacts to it. Keeps on making a mistake, then maybe you got to try a different tactic. But for the most part, the kids I have now, it's they're all great kids, and it's good.
It's great, man. So what's your message to all the kids that come from similar beginnings that can learn from you?
I always keep going back to the don't give up type of attitude, but basically that's kind of where it all stems from, right? You got a dream or a goal.
You talk about a gratitude list.
Yeah, well, you have your gratitude list, makes you feel better right away, right? So
we can always find something to be grateful for. I always tell people, you know, people are always grateful when things are going good, but they're not when things are going a little bit bumpy is when I think it's the time to be the most grateful for. It's like, I'm grateful even when things are going a little bit kind of messy in my life, because they're not going to get better if you don't express that gratitude towards not just yourself, but towards other people as well. And people wear it on their face, you know, with anger and whatnot, even with what's going on right now in the world. You know, I think that, you know, things could be softened up a little bit and a lot more, say, more comfort and optimism if people would just treat people kinder.
Yeah, it's a crazy world out there right now, man.
It is. Yeah.
There's a lot of selfish people. There's a lot of, you know, me people. Oh, just for themselves. And that's one thing I realized too, getting out in the real world after playing such a long career, is that this it's a pretty cool world out there. There's great people, but it's
not for the faint of heart, is it?
But
that's what we got. We got to work with what we got.
Yeah.
You have the choice.
Doesn't change me.
No. You know, you're the same guy that I met 20 some odd years ago, buddy. Yeah. And don't ever change, because who you are is an awesome person. I love you for who you are.
Thank you, Philly.
So what's next for Metro in his life? You know, All Over the Map is obviously a platform that we get real stories out to the world that impact people and show the humanism behind the so-called glamour. I know you give 100% into giving back. How does that look moving forward? I know you talked about, you know, these different platforms that you're working with. Just know that this platform is a community to support anything that people are doing to make a contribution.
Yeah, what I'm doing now, though, back to, you know, I got the Metro Method, where I'm doing player development, mentoring the young kids, you know, giving them pointers what I've been through, you know, helping them become better players, especially better young men, right? So,
yep.
Doing that, I'm in a great place here. I'm down in Tampa. You know, I'm doing some work with the Lightning, learn to play program, start up a...
How stoked were you when they won the Stanley Cup Finals this past year?
That was awesome.
I mean, I know there was no fans in the stands, and it must have been a little bit kind of weird. I know it was weird watching, but, yeah. You know, seeing a guy like Steven Stamkos hoist the cup there for the first time, you know, it must have been pretty cool, emotional. I saw you had your Instagram Live going on. You're like, this is amazing, or whatever. So I felt like I was kind of there for a minute. It was pretty cool watching it through you.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I, we went to they had the big river walk, or they had, obviously, I don't know if you saw footage, but they're on the channel side going up in boats with the Stanley Cup. And then they got off, took a trolley to the big stadium where the Bucks play, Raymond James Stadium. And it was a great, great celebration. But, you know, it was such a hard trophy to win this year. Those guys being in a bubble for 65 days, not seeing a family or member, or, you know, no fans. I want to talk about raw emotion and passion for sport. Seeing those guys block shots. And
it was amazing.
Just pure raw, no fans, no cheering. It was great to see. The hockey was phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it was actually next level hockey. I mean, some of the skill set that came out was, I mean, it was different.
You still hear about the injuries that guys are playing through, you know, like a torn labrum, Sagan. You know, it's just the stuff, you know, he's out for 5 months now, or 4 months. It's just what guys endure for that cup. You know, you got to win 16 games.
Yep. Well, I mean, you won a championship overseas. Let's talk a little bit about that. So you know what it's like to go all the way. And I mean, the playoffs are a whole different game than the regular season, aren't they?
Yeah, everything, every mistake that you make, every play is so heightened. You know, it's just everything is at another level. So I've been fortunate enough to be on some good teams. You know, I won the championship in Lugano, Switzerland, where, you know, I had Ville Peltonen, played NHL, Newmelin, defenseman, Jason York, another guy played in Ottawa. But great support cast, but you just realize what these are going to be your friends forever type deal, you know, these guys you win a cup with. So I've won two, and the journey's great with a bunch of guys in the dressing room going for one goal.
Absolutely. So any last words before we have you back on the show again?
I don't know, man. I guess the work that you're doing for everyone, I'm so thankful for you having me on here. And if anyone needs to reach out to me, I'm no doctor, but I'm here to talk to, you know, if anyone's going through any stuff, because it's not easy out there.
It's not. And so how can we follow you there, Mets? Obviously, you're on Instagram at Glenn Metropolit, Metro.
Metro, or, you know, the Metro Method. You know, that's Instagram. It's pretty much my only platform right now. And, you know, as I'm growing here, so.
Yeah, I can see your hair is growing really fast.
You see that? Yeah, it's really nice. It's coming good.
Yeah, you're inspiring me to shave my noodle today.
Wow. You're looking good, man. I wouldn't do that. Hold on to it as long as you can.
I don't know. I got a little bit left there. So we'll see if, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, throw some fertilizer on it a little later today.
There you go. Peanut butter solution.
Absolutely. Grow Green Hydroponics. Anyways, sure appreciative having you on here, buddy. And we look forward to hearing from you soon. And, you know, we obviously stay in contact. So thank you so much for coming on to All Over the Map.
Thanks for having me, Philly.
Right on, brother.
Keep up the good work, brother.